I was mentioning earlier on this in relation to an event that is happening over in the Museum of Country Life in Thurlough in Castlebar this Thursday. And it's an event that's to do with taking people back to the time and the impact of rural electrification in Ireland back in the 1950s and 60s. It's a project which is called the Electric Irish Homes Textile Project. And on Thursday, between 2 and 4, at the Museum of Country Life in Thurlough in Castlebar, some women from the region are going to share and explore their experiences and their memories of rural electrification. And they're doing it using a variety of very creative approaches. And I think it's a very interesting little project, this. And I am, first of all, delighted to have on the line Dr. Saoirse O'Brien from Kingston University. Saoirse, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Tommy.
You were, I think, head of the research team on this, were you?
Yes, this is part of a research project that started off as a historical investigation into rural electrification and the effect on rural Ireland, and very much about the effect on everyday life. And what I ended up doing was we ended up focusing it to look particularly on women's experience of rural electrification, and particularly looking at the introduction of electric appliances into the home. So we were been looking at things like washing machines, the fridge, the electric iron, and looking at what's actually, you know, what effect did that actually have on everyday life in the home. So, and very specifically in the kitchen. So it's, you know, because you have all of these new appliances coming in, people are getting electricity into their house for the first time, and there's this, all the advertising and the promotion where the ESB have rolled out the whole network. And there's all of these advertisements promising this amazing modern new life. And really what we were interested in doing is looking at, well, what effect did this actually have? You know, yeah. That's the fantasy. What was the reality as well?
Yeah, you see, because it's so long ago now, and that the people who'll be giving their experiences on Thursday about the impact that suddenly this thing of being able to plug in an iron or a washing machine or a kettle. I mean, you know, the kettle was always on boil on the range because that was the only way of doing it. You know, because it was so long ago, sadly, the generation who remember that are now in their twilight years, aren't they?
Well, this is the thing about it, is it's not actually all that long ago, because you're talking about living memory, and that there are quite a lot of people still around who remember this, and for them, that's their lived experience. And part of what we're doing, because we're having an exhibition on this topic, which is the main exhibition's opening in the museum in July, but part of that we did an oral history project where we went and interviewed about 60 women in who are mostly in their 70s and 80s, about their experience and their memories. And this is part of what we were doing with the textile project as well, that an awful lot of them said, when we asked them, what did you do when you got, you know, for example, a washing machine and you weren't doing a Monday wash day anymore, what did you do? And an awful lot of them said, we did textile work, we did knitting, we did sewing, we did crochet. And that was the reason for this artistic response. Creative project has been very much focused around using textiles, because it's the material that an awful lot of women are used to using, both in terms of, you know, there's women in the Aran Islands knitting sweaters and for sale, for money, for income, but also then people making, women making clothes for their family. And we had commissioned through Age and Opportunity, who are the group that run the Bealtaine Festival, and which this showcase on Thursday is part of. We had commissioned Anna Spearman, who's an artist from Sligo, and to work with this group of women from around the Mayo area and actually see what is their response to all of the material that we were finding, and also to, you know, tell us what was their experience of the whole thing. What did they think of it?
Right, so just clarify, the event on Thursday, which is the one I mentioned, the Electric Irish Homes Textile Project, the participants in that will be women. Will they be talking about their memories of how their lives changed as a result of about rural electrification, or will they be talking about the knitting and the sewing and the putting together of textiles pre-electricity?
what they're actually doing is they're talking about their experience before and after and what was it like to live through that change, but they're using textiles as a medium to do so. So this isn't just us coming in and talking about it. They have done a creative project using textiles.
Okay, and one of the participants is actually on the line, yes. Noreen Durkin. Good morning, Noreen.
Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you from?
I'm from Castlebar.
Castlebar. And how did you get involved in this?
Well, Saoirse came to speak to us in the ITA, and she asked us, would we take part, or think about taking part in this project? And it sounded very nice, and it sounded as if we all needed to record our memories as long as we are able. Because, you know, another generation of people won't ever know what happened that time. So we did sign up to doing it. And then we had interviews and we did all that. And that was all very nice. And it took us a little while to put our thoughts together and to get them down on paper in good order. We had to think about our punctuality and our proper phrases and all that because we knew people would not be reading it. And then came the textile art project. So we went to Greenon for a night because some other ladies joined us. We went to Greenon for a night in Upper County Louth to get to know each other, and we met Saoirse and Anna as well. And we came back and we had a tour of the museum and to kind of give it a bit of inspiration. And I can assure you there's a lot of things there that a lot of people would be interested in seeing. I mean, old things that we have nearly forgotten about ourselves, but it was absolutely marvellous to see them. And even though some of them are in great condition now, it's lovely to see those things and to bring back memories to us. So then we all got down to our textile art. And that's what, I have to say, a bit of a challenge. Anna was with us, and she was great inspiration, help, and she had infinite patience with us.
Yeah, this because is Anna Spearman. Yeah.
Because as we all had sewing and knitting and different crafts in our own way, but when you sit down to do something, because the textile art really is a project of anything to demonstrate stories or snapshots of memories, such as sewing or knitting or craft or to explore the subject. So it was very different to what we were used to, and it took us a little while in actual fact to get into our head what we had to do and how to do it. And because we knew it was going to be in an exhibition, we were trying to be extremely careful and to do it as well as we could.
And what kind of textiles will be on show on Thursday?
Well, we will have knitting, sewing, crafts. Absolutely, we had great talent in the group. We had marvellous talent in the group. We started off and got ourselves down together. And we have a project of different things, like a dresser in a house, or maybe a wash machine, dishwasher, the new and the old, because we had to do before and after. And so I think myself is going to be very exciting, and I hope people will like it and come to see it from 2 to 4 on Thursday, and there'll be a cup of tea. And then the exhibition, the real exhibition, is starting in July, from July 2019, 2020. So we're excited at this stage about it.
Well, you should be. Yeah. Can I take you back to, do you remember the fellas putting up the poles?
I do indeed. Yeah. Very well.
And when you were in national school now, was there electricity?
No.
No. So everything was done by hand.
Yeah, but you got up in the morning, your mother got up in the morning and she had to take out the ashes and the fire was wake the night before, make sure the coals were alive and put on the fire and put on the big kettle with the water that water had to be got from somewhere, the well or someplace, it wasn't there already, and wait for the kettle to boil. And really and truly, when I look back at the slavery, and it was slavery now that we have all a better way of life, that our mothers went through, and they did all this work and an awful lot more without a word. Everybody was the same. Nobody had anything better than anybody else. So long as people had their health and the few shillings to pay their bills, that really was their big worry. And so long as people had food and that kind of thing.
And when it came to ironing the shirts pre-electrification, was the iron heated?
The iron, well, in our house, because my mother was in America, she was a little bit more. But we had an iron with two things. So you put in one into the fire and heated it and put it into the iron, and then you could put the other one back in to heat it. So it was constant into the fire and out of the fire with the iron. And it was hard work, and sometimes the iron was too hot and sometimes it wasn't hot enough, and you're putting it in and taking it out. But people did it, and that's the way they lived.
And did your own mum, please God, did she live long enough to see rural electrification?
Oh, she did, and actually my grandmother lived to be 99.
Right.
And she was so, she couldn't believe. Actually, when the lights were switched on at our house that particular evening, the ladies of the village came to our house because my mum, as I said, happened to be in America for a few years. And because some people were actually afraid their house would go up on fire, maybe, or they didn't really know what to do with it or how it was going to light. So we had the village ladies at our house. And so I always think my grandmother, when the light came on, she said, "It's a light from heaven." And so I demonstrated that in a piece that I did in the museum. And it was, people saw corners in their houses they never saw before.
Yeah.
And the dust and everything that we never saw. And it was such a blessing. It was the most important thing, I think, ever happened in rural women's lives.
Yeah,
I would say without a
shadow of doubt. Because as you say, it, they didn't regard it as slavery, but we could definitely term it slavery if you compare it with the mod cons of today. We have Alexa now. All we have to do is say, "Turn on the radio, Alexa."
That's right.
And it's done. So like, it's gone from one extreme to another.
It is, and for that reason alone, I think it was great to write our memories. Now, they're not perfect. I mean, there are memories. But it was great some other generation along the way, or even our own children that never saw this day, would be able to look back and say, "Well, look at the way people worked in those times, and how what a blessing the electrification was." It was the most, as I said, important thing I think ever happened in rural women's lives.
Yeah, it's amazing. People are texting in their memories of when the electricity arrived. One man said his neighbour said, "Wasn't it nice of I don't know, were they called the electricity supply board?
ESB, yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't it nice of them to put wires up so that the birds could sit on them? Another lady rang to say that her mother would take out the light bulbs after
but
in case they went on fire. There was an element of real fear about it.
Oh, there was, and the other real fear people had was, could they pay for it? Because they really weren't used to having bills, apart from maybe a few shillings for the rates. And the other bills were paid all when you sold cattle, and when you had bought eggs at the shop and the butter that you sold and the groceries were bought then. So people were terrified that they were going to have huge bills.
And that's one of the things that you see from the ESB advertisements from that point in time as well, is they're advertising to people that this is not just, it's cheap, but what can you get for this money? You know, that it's going to bring new things into your life and you're going to be able to have a better standard of living.
Yes.
To try and combat the fear about the cost.
Yeah, the washing machine appears, judging by what I'm seeing on our screens, the washing machine was more important than almost anything else, even the fridge, because, you know, there was so much labour attached to washing, wasn't there?
Yeah, and it'd be washing, yes. First of all, you had to get the washer to put into the pot, the big pot in the fire, to heat it, or bring it, heat it as far as you could. Then you had to be all the time filling pots, because you had to rinse the things, especially if you were washing big blankets.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an exercise in itself. And, you know, what we did that time was the blankets were put into the big million vat, then you walked on it. That's the way you had to wash it, because they were huge, very heavy blankets. And usually when they were washed, it took them ages to dry. So a mangle came on then. It was a thing called a mangle. It was a tub with two.
I remember. Yeah. That was slavery, too.
It was, but at least it got out of the water. And you couldn't put those blankets up in a line to dry because they would break the line, so they were put on a hedge or on a wall to dry. And so, you know, and the jumpers were very big that time, very big, bulky jumpers. All clothes that time, you know, tweeds, they were very difficult. And women, the washing machine, I think the kettle was the blessing, first blessing, and an iron. Washing machine definitely came next. The fridge was way back.
Yeah.
Because at that time, people make their own cows and they had their own food from the garden. So they didn't really have to be this best before. We never knew about it at that time.
Yeah, and of course then the radio would have been important too.
Yeah, the radio came to Ballinturber just about the time we won our 1951 and 50 All-Ireland.
Oh, did it, yeah.
And my neighbour next door, my cousin Peter Prendergast, was fullback on that team, and we had very many people didn't get radio. We got radio when we sold the turkeys at Christmas, when we had bought an iron and a kettle first. And like people who hadn't radio, though, I came to the village and it was beautiful fine. I think I remember it was beautiful fine weather. And all the people outside listened to this radio and people were so excited. And imagine, we're still waiting for another All-Ireland. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. A gentleman called in to say that when the first electric kettle came to their house, their grandmother lived with them. She refused to drink the water from the kettle because she said she'd only light up inside.
people, it was absolutely surprising what people thought. The great imagination.
Yeah. Really and you imagine the Christmas lights, you know, when yes. the Christmas tree and yeah. you know, just the small things that right. made such a difference.
Oh, but really, as I said, it was a blessing. It was, you know, at the time, I suppose, they were so afraid of not being able to pay for it, and they only wouldn't have one light on first and plugging on one plug, and then gradually they got a bit more when they got a bit more money and when they saw how good it was. I mean, Barton, he had to light the lantern to go to milk the cows. I came in to Castlebar, 10 miles of my father's affairs, and all we had was the lantern to show us the way in.
Yeah, the tilly lamp.
For the cattle, yeah. No, this is on the fair day.
Oh, on the fair day, sorry, yeah.
And like, we all had it, right? We hadn't seen a lamp. We had, first of all, we had a lamp with paraffin oil and a wick and a globe that had to be cleaned and minded, and if you broke the globe, you'd be killed. That was the first thing we had, and of course, lots of candles.
Yeah, candles
and,
were
huge. And I mean, the irony of it is that people were terrified that the house would get burned, but when the electricity came, in actual fact, it was far safer than candles.
Yeah, another caller says when the electricity arrived in their parish, again, it was a granny living with, and I suppose in that time era, the 50s and 60s, grannies did live with yes. sons and daughters. Mm. She wondered would there be electric knitting needles.
She was before her time.
She sure was.
Yes.
She sure was.
Yes.
Well, look, it sounds fascinating. And Saoirse, I'm sure you're looking forward to hopefully lots of people turning up.
Absolutely,
on
yeah.
Thursday, 2 to 4. It's for it's open to the general public.
Yes, and you don't need to book, you can just come along. It's 2 o'clock in the museum, and then we're showing off the work that has been done for the textile project, and there's some of us going to talk about it, and then all of the work is going to appear in the exhibition that's opening on to the public on the 20th of July. It's the Kitchen Power exhibition. It's women's experiences of rural electrification.
Yeah. Teresa says, I was a teenager when, as they called it, the light came. And the most enduring memory of all is the lovely young men who came to live in the area whilst they worked on the project.
That's right. And married some of the native ladies.
Yeah, but you see, that was all part of it too, wasn't
it? And gave jobs to local people. And you see, some of those nice, fine young fellas came and they stayed in the houses around. And that was also a little bit of an income for the woman of the house.
Yeah.
And it brought a bit more life to the area and for the dances and all that kind of thing. It's great.
Yeah, you know, it's funny the things that are coming in.
Yes.
One lady said she, you know, after rural electrification, this would have been in the 70s or 80s, she bought her mum a curling tongs. And she used to put it in the fridge.
Yeah.
For what reason, I have no idea. A lady, she said, she and her husband bought a fridge for her parents when the electricity came on. Now, this was in the mid-70s. Her dad said, we're as good as the Yanks now. We have the ice box.
That's right, the ice box.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it was fascinating times, and it's great to recall those memories. And as I said, we're really blessed that we have the memories to write them down and the ability to write them.
Yeah,
our age.
And please God for future generations to actually
yes.
understand
yes.
what Ireland was like pre-rural electrification.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And you know, it was forward-thinking for its time, Saoirse, in ways, wasn't it?
Absolutely, it very much was, and it's very much the idea of trying to bring modern services and modern infrastructure to the entire country that
yeah.
you didn't have. That it wasn't, that it was good for everybody, and that was very much rolled out by the ESB across the country, sort of area by area. But what they were doing is trying to give the same facilities, where if you lived in the centre of Dublin, you would have the same facilities if you lived out in rural Mayo, that it would make absolutely no difference.
No difference. Yeah, but you know, there's a big argument going on about broadband being supplied to every home in the country. Whatever about broadband, there was no way anybody should have been able to have to do without electricity. And thankfully, our government, whoever minister was responsible, has to be applauded for having the foresight, I suppose, to bring electricity to rural Ireland.
Yeah, because it was actually planned from the 1930s,
right.
off the back of the Shannon scheme in Ardna Cruithe. But what had happened was you then had the Second World War happened, so that it was actually 1946 that the rural electrification project kicked off, because they had to wait until the Second World War was finished, because they were doing things like they were getting a lot of the poles actually came from Finland.
Did they?
Yeah.
We weren't able to supply our own poles.
the very particular type of wood and the height of them and the size of them, we didn't have enough of those type of forests, whereas Finland did. So they were all being shipped from Finland. But then we had the expertise, so all of the staff were all local. They were putting up the poles, stringing the wires, and then as well that you had the ESB demonstrators who were young women who were coming mostly out of domestic science teaching and industrial management, so like Carlborough Street in Dublin, St. Angela's and Sligo, and they were actually working with women who, for example, bought an electric cooker for the first time. They would actually come out to your house and look at the cooker with you and then do something like bake a batch of scones or bake some brown bread just to check that it was actually working okay. And then but also as well to check that you were comfortable with it and that to help people be confident with these new appliances, because they were quite new in a lot of areas. And they didn't cover physics in school at the time, so to have that background and that knowledge and that understanding was to try and help people be comfortable with it.
Yeah. This has generated a huge number of calls, and I'm delighted because people are even saying, their mums and dads are no longer alive and they never got this kind of information from them. So it's great to have it. This lady called from Knock. She remembers two of the men who were working on the electricity lines. They were from Donegal and their names were John Fitzgerald and Hughie Boyle. They used to leave the climbing hooks in their sheds and she always remembers their accents. Hughie used to say, "Are you up there, John? Have you got the hook, John?" And these kind of memories just come flooding back this morning. This one says, "I was 4 years old when I remember the ESB putting the power in our village and the ESB workers telling us that the wires were clotheslines." We'd only one light in the kitchen. And this one says, "I remember radio with wet and dry batteries. We got money from the United States to buy it." Dear, oh dear. And Teresa says, "In school, the question was, how many lights are ye getting? It took me years to realise I was about the only one telling the truth and saying one."
Yes,
says Teresa. Loads and loads of memories there.
The other thing to do is, of course, literally, when the poles were being put out, farmers are approached to see about putting poles in their land, and of course sometimes the pole was planked right in the middle of the best field.
Of course.
And that also took a little bit of negotiation, because they weren't happy without that, because they're afraid they couldn't plough around it and count the wires coming out of it and all that kind of thing. So that took a little bit of time as well, I think, to assure people that they would be safe and all that kind of thing, because on your best field this thing would plough to the middle of it, and at the time the land was very important.
It sure was. Well, I suppose the only thing in hindsight that would have been better would have been had we put them underground, but look, that's where we are. Anyway, 2 to 4, Thursday afternoon of this week, the Museum of Country Life in Thurla in Castlebar, between 2 o'clock and 4. Drop in if you're around and relive some of those wonderful memories about the impact that rural electrification had on, well, in this case, it's Saoirse, where we're talking predominantly the impact for women.
That's what the focus of the exhibition is on, yeah.
And what about the poor men?
It also affects them as well.
It does, because, behind every good man is an even better woman. Yeah. A lot of people calling in, I like this one. It says, "My grandfather used to spend hours upon hours moulding the potatoes, and when the electricity came in, he said, wouldn't it be great if there was such a thing as an electric spade?" Well, they haven't even got an electric spade now.
Yes.
So, there you have it. Listen, thank
you. There'll be a cup of tea on Thursday as well for people who want to visit.
Boiled in an electric kettle, yes?
Right. Yeah,
definitely. Sure. All right, listen, it's been lovely sharing those memories. Saoirse O'Brien, Dr. Saoirse O'Brien from Kingston University. Where is Kingston University? Excuse my ignorance, Saoirse.
It's in South London.
In South London. And is that where you're based?
Yes, that's where I've been working for the last number of years.
Okay, and did you grow up in rural Ireland?
I did not. I grew up in suburban Dublin, but my mother grew up in rural Limerick.
Ah, I see. Very good. And Noreen, you're still living in Mayo?
I am indeed. I'm here in Castlebar.
Very good. Well, listen, it's been lovely talking to you. How many women are involved in the project?
About 14 altogether.
All over Ireland or from the West?
No, mostly from round.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
And we met every Thursday, every second Thursday, so we kind of had to be sort of close. So sometimes things had to be cancelled at short notice. Sometimes we had to be called at short notice, maybe.
Yeah.
So I suppose it was better the people are near, you know.
Yeah. A lot of people texting in to say, you know, that pre-rural electrification, and in fairness, you know, I suppose central heating really didn't become popular until the 80s in Ireland. You know, that the amount of old jumpers and rags that used to be sewn onto the blankets just to make them warmer.
That's right. And even old coats over people in bed.
Yeah.
Because the other thing is the immersion.
Yeah.
Yes.
The whole thing about the immersion and having to switch the immersion heating off when you leave the heating.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, the last text I'm going to read, and I could be reading text for ages here, some really funny ones, but John says, and I suppose a nice way to end this interview, he says, I just wonder, were people better off in terms of health as people worked and moved more? Socially, people visited one another more and had a better sense of community. Now we obviously have more conveniences, but are we any happier?
No, we're not, because we had common or plain food. We could go out to the garden and pull when we needed it.
Called organic.
Exactly.
Yeah. Patsy Downey in England says, when we got electricity in Ballina, my Granny Lizzie, would wait for the song to finish and then sing into the radio, followed by, now let the Jackings sing as good as that. That's from Patsy. You know, a lot of people actually used to think that when a song came on the radio, the band were actually live in the studio. This one says that the Sacred Heart lamp could now be lit full time, but the men working about the but the men worried about the amount of land taken up by each pole, which that was an issue. Anyway, listen, girls, thanks for joining us. Saoirse O'Brien, Dr. Saoirse O'Brien from Kingston University, and Noreen Durkin, one of the participants in this event, Thursday 2 to 4 in the Museum of Country Life in Thurla in Castlebar. Thank you, ladies, for joining us. Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you very much.